survival depends on strong relationships. They must summon their courage, bravely dive into the unknown. If they get it wrong, they face extinction. No pressure.
Yeah, dude, no pressure. Let's just do Court Killers!
MODOK!
No, wait, what? What are you doing?
You didn't hear him?
No, I did. I was trying to pretend not to.
Hey, folks, welcome to Court Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. I'm not MODOK. Tom Merritt.
Again, it sounded like MODOK was giving the documentary just then. I assume that was Patton Oswalt.
That
was Patton Oswalt narrating the upcoming Penguin Town, a docuseries coming to Netflix about the South African penguin, which battles balmy beaches instead of the Arctic expanse. Can they manage to reproduce while living among the humans?
I'll tell you what, man.
Penguin Forget Town. It, Brian. Netflix. It's Penguin Town.
Netflix is crushing it on all of these documentaries. Life in Color was so, so good.
I think this is more of a
Life in Cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Coldler. Oh.
Well, no, it's South Africa, so I think it's actually pretty nice there.
A Life in Depends Cold on what, and maybe yeah. still racist? Question mark?
Well, so.
No.
In June, it's racist at opposite times.
All right.
Because it's... let's quickly move on to the primary target.
Oh, smooth. Smooth.
Thanks. Nobody will notice. Hey, multiple reports say Amazon is in talks to acquire MGM. The movie studio / television studio, with Variety reporting the deal could be worth $9 billion. Amazon, it's variable pricing. Just wait a day. It'll go down. MGM was valued around $5.5 billion, including with its debt, just as early as late last year. CNBC thinks a deal could be reached as early as Tuesday. Wall Street Journal was saying sometime this week. So it does seem like, you know, the sources on the ground say it's going to happen. Variety reported back in December that MGM was looking for a buyer. And senior VP of Amazon Studios, Mike Hopkins, recently brought in, might I add, possibly for this very reason, is reportedly negotiating directly with MGM board chairman Kevin Ulrich on the deal. MGM is right now owned by a group of investors that took it out of bankruptcy in 2012. So that's the kind of move you do where you're like, I don't think it's a total loss. Let's step in and keep it alive, refurbish, put a new coat of paint on it, and then resell it for more. MGM has The Hobbit, Stargate, RoboCop, in its library, and it has a deal with the Broccoli family to make the James Bond movies. I phrase it that way because the Broccoli family has an unusual amount of control over the Bond movies, but it is exclusive with MGM. So if Amazon did get MGM, any Bond movies that are made would probably fall under Amazon's purview, which is a big deal.
So pure speculation here, but like we have celebrated multiple times the fact that we finally split apart from what we had previously called the monoculture, the idea that there were only three television stations, maybe four or five if you counted PBS. Nobody counts PBS. But then, but now we've seen this split into a bunch of different islands, and now, I mean, is it the natural order of things for everything to collapse back into three or four big players?
I mean, I think it is. I think oligopoly is kind of a natural state for a mature industry where you have enough to be competitive, but not so many that nobody can make a go of it, right? You need to have that concentration of wealth to make it worthwhile for investors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If I were to be flippant, Brian, I would say, what you mean is, we complained about having to pay for all those channels, and then we broke it all up in independent streaming services, and then we all complained that there were too many. And now that it's all consolidating back together, I bet you're going to complain that it's doing that. But it really is the cycle of things, right? I was saying from the beginning when everybody's like, there's too many streaming services, I was like, wait for it to shake out. Cable's going to go away. We have to wait for that to happen for this to make a little more sense. And not all of these streaming services are going to survive. So you have to wait to see which ones are going to survive. And part of the streaming services surviving is consolidation. We're going to talk a little more later. And we talked last week about HBO Max owner Warner Media consolidating into Discovery to create a new, bigger way to go about things. Viacom and CBS reunited so that they could have more more oomph behind it. And MGM probably wasn't going to be able to go it alone for much longer. You need leverage if you really want to pour the big money into things. They had investors to take care of that, you know, for 9 years here. But those investors are like, you know, we did that in order to cash out, and now's the time to cash out. Amazon seems like they're willing to overpay for it if this $9 billion is true. But either way, Amazon could use some original content. Everybody could. I'm very curious. Netflix bought Miller World. Netflix is making licensing deals. I'm very curious to see if Netflix will just go and buy a studio, or if they're still intent on, no, we want to build it from the ground up. We don't want to bring in anyone into our culture. Amazon doesn't seem to mind.
This is not a fully formed thought, but is there anything to the idea that there's sort of a natural gravity well that begins to form around various institutions? And yes, there are giant explosions, your Netflixes that explode out, and they collect talent from all around, and then they consolidate into a Jupiter or whatever. And then you've got your late to the game Amazons, and then they're trying to grab everything they can. And so you get your IOs and your Europas, or I forget which moons are on where, but my point is, this feels like the natural flow of things. And I don't know that I hate it, even though I feel like part of me wants to hate it, given that this is sort of, you know, our hatred of this was what founded the entire show.
Yeah. Let go of your hate, Brian. this is the way it's going to go. And it doesn't have to be bad for the consumer, right? I think MGM was always going to get caught up by somebody. MGM wasn't part of the let's put power into the hands of the consumers movement. MGM was just kind of something that barely survived. And there were a couple of ways MGM could have gone. MGM could have gone much more bankrupt than it did and be sold off for parts, right? So somebody just comes in and buys all the licensing deals and the intellectual property and is done with it, and everybody gets laid off. Instead, the investors came in and saved some of the jobs. And now it's a play of, not only do we have cool properties, we also have expertise. We also have people in the building that know how to make movies, know how to make TV shows, and Amazon gets all of that. I don't think Netflix wants that. Netflix is looking at this saying, we want to build it ourselves. We want to have, we'll hire people like crazy, but we want to have them in the Netflix way of doing things. So Amazon's taking a bit of a risk here when it says, we want to add a bunch of people who've worked in a traditional movie studio / television studio into our way of doing things, which doesn't always work out. It isn't always efficient, but it does jumpstart your studio. Which is weird to me, because Amazon Studios seems like it's doing pretty well. But maybe internally they want to advance it faster. Anyway, all of that is to say, I think this is just the companies who make this content looking for the best way forward to get an edge on their competition. And MGM getting bought isn't necessarily, oh crap, one of the indies is gone. It was just kind of wreckage on the side of the road that somebody fixed up.
Well, and remind me if I got this wrong, but it's like just last week we were talking about HBO Max collecting Discovery Plus into the fold, and we were theorizing that maybe it'll be a Warner mega system or something like that.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little more about what John Stankey of AT&T was saying about that. Obviously, that merger not finishing until next year. So it's going to be a while before we see it. But the idea is AT&T doesn't want debt, so they're spinning Warner Media out, which could have landed Warner Media as an MGM, right? Not big enough to make it on its own, needing help, maybe going through bankruptcy. But instead, they're merging with Discovery, which has a worldwide presence. So you're seeing an independent media content focused company being created, and maybe that's better for content creation because they won't be under AT&T's thumb.
So the hard assets that Amazon is acquiring are going to be the back catalog of everything of MGM. But then also there's the speculative assets in terms of what they could do with MGM licensed other things. And I think about like weird stuff, like as a child of the 80s, I think of like Strange Brew that was an MGM production.
Oh, sure.
Production.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like that's the part where I suspect the real gems may end up being.
Right. And don't forget that another hard asset they get is a studio lot staffed with professionals who know how to make this stuff happen. So if Amazon says, hey, we'd like to pour some money into making new Strange Brew content, they've got the people on the lot there, some of which may have been around back in those days, that can be like, yeah, we can totally make that for you. So you heard it here first. We're banking on new Strange Brew content.
Strange Brew 2,
Amazon MGM.
Yep.
Yeah. Will they replace the lion in MGM with like a box?
I mean, they had the original MGM lion and they were cranking its tail and it belched instead of roared. That's what I remember most about Strange Brew.
In Strange Brew. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, just in general. Well, if Amazon does get MGM,
maybe the MGM lion like belches fire and it's like, ah, that's a fire stick.
I bet it belches deals. Okay. If you like this movie, you may also lie.
Well, if you want a deal, then why don't you head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers. That's where you can make a deal with us. $1 per episode is all we ask for you to keep us live and independent. We bring you the best and the brightest in news of how to watch what you want, when you want, whenever you want, on whatever device you please. And all we ask is for, you know, a buck. Yeah, you'd give us a buck, right? 50 cents a piece.
You, the viewer/listener, are the outside investor that has saved our MGM. And we can remain independent because of it.
Trying to think of like what a sexy MGM is. I'm not following
James
you on
Bond.
That. My MGM, my memory grandma mamma. That's what it is. Yep. Memory grandma mamma.
What you just said. That's exactly what they're saying.
As good as it gets.
Let's talk about how to watch. Bryce had already launched it. We were just talking about Warner Media, and Warner Media announced that a less expensive version of HBO Max will become available in the first week of June for $9.99 a month. That's just three nines. I don't know why I said so many nines. $9.99 a month with ads. We knew it was coming. We didn't know when. Now we know. Coming in June, $9.99 a month with ads. Ads will not run against HBO original programming. So if you're watching Sopranos or Game of Thrones, you won't get ads. They'll only run on Max Originals and content from the Turner TBS networks, etc. The cheaper ad-supported version will not get the day and date movie releases that HBO Max gets for $14.99 a month. So Dune and what's coming up here in a couple of weeks, In the Heights, stuff like that, you won't get on the ad-supported version. Otherwise, all the content will be there. And at $9.99 a month, it's the most expensive ad-supported offering out there. Hulu and Paramount Plus both cost $5.99 a month with ads. Peacock is either free with ads, which is limited content, or you get all the content with ads for $4.99. But remember, HBO Max started by saying, hey, HBO costs $15 a month. HBO Max gives you a bunch more for the same price. So they're still following along that line of like, well, it was $15 a month for HBO plus a bunch more. We throw ads on there, we'll knock $5 off.
I hate everything about this. Also, I agree 100% with it, by which I mean, I've never been a fan, as longtime viewers know, of the way they've launched HBO Max. I think it's a terrible misuse of the brand. However, combining it with Discovery Plus offers the opportunity for some kind of relaunch of the brand, in which case...
And that won't happen until mid next year.
Correct.
So
a whole year down the way.
And that's just the brand. There's no... We don't know that any of that stuff is coming to HBO Max.
Correct. But if you are going to do that, it seems to me like the right play is to just drive what you have into the ground, knowing that you're going to relaunch anyway in 1 year. Like, go ahead and make HBO mean nothing. Just make it all about the catalog. Make it all about the value. Drive as many people in there as you can. And then know that 1 year from now, you'll be able to rebrand as Warner Land, Warner Plus, Warner Vision, Warner. I warned you, it's Warner. Whatever you want to call it,
I warned you.
I mean, but you understand what I'm saying, right? Like if you intend to nuke the brand, this is the right way to do it.
I think you're overstating it. I always have. I don't think this is going to nuke the brand, but I think you're onto something, which is not, if I can state it just a little less nuclearly, you stick with this knowing that $9.99 is going to sound crazy to people with ads, because you have a story to tell to explain it, which is HBO is $15 a month. If you get it alone, still, you can still get it alone from a cable company. It's going to cost you $15 a month unless they do some deal that you're stuck into. But generally, it's $15 a month. And then, well, now you can get it for $10 a month with ads. You can get HBO. You never could get HBO for $10 a month with ads on an ongoing basis. Now you can. And HBO shows won't even have ads, and you get all the new HBO shows. So they have a story to tell. We'll see whether it works or not. But I think you're right, Brian, where they're like, we just need to get to next year, because once Discovery comes in, we can change all the rules. And we'll have a reason to change all the rules. And the association of, but HBO costs $15, will have been weakened enough by then, especially by doing a $10 version, that, I don't know, maybe they do a tier that's everything's still $15, but if you want just Max and Discovery stuff without HBO, maybe that is $7.99 and then $4.99 with ads. It'll give them options.
This is the brilliance, is they may accidentally step into something that is a really good idea, in which case they can act like that's what they intended to do the entire time.
Yeah. No, exactly. So they seem to think two things. One is they can make just as much money on a subscriber with ads as they can on a non-ad subscriber. So they're not really concerned about boosting ad-driven subscriptions. They're just offering the option. And the other thing is that they think that $15 a month price is working. And I don't know, they've got 60 million subscribers. So apparently it's compelling enough that people are like, yeah, but I got to watch whatever, you know, whatever the thing is that they got to watch.
We've already spoken. I have already publicly eaten crow over the fact that HBO Max has provided so much value that despite the fact that I think it's a terrible name and a terrible brand value, they got the goods. People are showing up.
Yeah.
And I'm including me. I'm enjoying it.
Bello DLR suggests maybe it'll be $5 for just the ads.
I'll sign up.
A few other notes about the intention by AT&T to spin off WarnerMedia and merge it with Discovery. AT&T CEO John Stankey was talking to the JP Morgan Global Technology Media Communications Conference Monday and said AT&T just didn't have the global reach that Warner would need to win at streaming. And streaming is the future. Yes, movies are still making millions and millions of dollars and will again. But streaming is the future, and they didn't have the reach to compete with Netflix, Disney Plus, and Amazon around the world. Jacob Kostranakis at The Verge wrote this as part of the coverage of that. Combining the two companies seems to be a bet that the current streaming landscape with an assortment of large and small streamers isn't going to last much longer. Combining WarnerMedia and Discovery is about surviving the crash that may destroy smaller services and emerging stronger on the other side. And I think he's saying what I was saying earlier, which is everybody's teaming up to ride through the wave of change. And WarnerMedia picked an interesting partner because Discovery is making a lot of the type of content that WarnerMedia doesn't make, reality content. I mean, Warner makes some, but they don't make nearly the amount at the quality that Discovery makes. And Discovery is worldwide and has sports in a lot of places worldwide, which you don't think of them as that in the United States. So together, they do make a very compelling worldwide streamer. And I thought it was interesting, Brian, that AT&T's CEO would be like, yeah, we, AT&T, very domestic because we're a carrier. So we didn't think we could do them solid. We think we got them to, he tried to say, we got them to a point they couldn't have got without us, but to go farther, they need somebody else.
So there tends to be, you know, general structures that come out in biology and in cosmology or whatever. For every mammal in North America, there is a marsupial that is roughly an analog down in Australia. Like, is there just sort of a natural order of things? like, do we just end up with four services? Is that how we go? Four services and YouTube?
It seems to be what we want. When right? When I was joking earlier about everybody complains, like, too many channels and I don't get any choice. And then not enough choice. We want a small amount of options. We as humans seem to want about four or five options. And maybe that's all it is.
Right, Bryce.
Maybe what
your gut tell you?
I am already paying for almost all of this, and certainly all the big streaming services. I think I would be in favor of some amount of consolidation. I mean, we certainly hear the complaint that I believe Tom mentioned before, which is that, oh, now there are too many streaming services and now they all cost more than cable. But I think we wouldn't see that comment so much, so frequently, if there wasn't a nugget of truth to that. The truth that there is a lot of choice. There's probably too much choice for the average consumer.
Yeah, we got like a Disney Plus is pretty much Hulu, right? So those are kind of one clubhouse.
They are technically separate services still.
Correct. Yes. But essentially one's grown up Disney, one's kid Disney.
And I don't want kid Disney.
And then we've got HBO Max and now merging with Discovery Plus. So that gives us two. We got Warner, HBO Max, and so on. And then
you've got Disney Plus, the Disney Plus bundle. Let's call it that.
Sure.
With Hulu and ESPN Plus. You've got HBO Max with Discovery coming. You've got Paramount Plus, which is all of Viacom CBS. You've got Netflix, you've got Amazon, and you've got Peacock.
And then
you have two
as a wild card.
Also,
you have
Fox.
YouTube or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, once you start throwing in free ones, because then there's Pluto and Tubi, Crackle, and
but Tubi is Fox's Peacock. I believe we even named a show that. Tubi is Fox saying, I guess we own this. Let's use that like it's our version of that. But it feels like it's on the edge, right? It's not. It doesn't feel like it can hang as well as those others. And then you're right, Brian. Then we get into the niche providers, which could be your chiller type
Apple
services,
TV Plus,
your add-on channels, your YouTube channels, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, man, it just makes me feel like even more consolidation's about to happen.
I don't know who else is left to consolidate, but we'll keep an eye. We'll keep an eye out because you just never know. Sony either is just going to be like, we just want to make content.
Well, they sold off Crackle.
It sells off its studio.
Remember they sold off Crackle to the Chicken Soup for the Soul people.
Do they sell off the studio or do they say, we're just a production company. We just make stuff.
Oh, I wonder. Cause didn't they... Crunchyroll and Funimation merged recently, didn't they? Or Sony? Sony bought Funimation. Is that right?
Yep. You also do have like the hard holdouts. For example, Curiosity Stream. Disclosure is a sponsor of Modern Rogue. $14.99 for an entire year of all you can eat. You know, their stuff.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be room for some of those in there too, because they have a particular appeal, like Criterion Collection too, as another example. Real quickly before we get out of how to watch, I got the new Apple TV 4K. That is the one with the new remote that everyone hated. Everyone but me hated the old remote. And so the new one fixes all that. It's got a click wheel, still has a touch screen in the middle. So if you want to do swipes, you can, but if you want to just click around, it's got directional arrows that you can click. It's chunkier, so it doesn't slide out of your hand as easy. It's got a mute button, so you don't just press the negative volume button and hold it down to mute. And it replaces the menu button with an arrow button. It also moved Siri to the side. Siri had its own button on the front of the old remote. And there's a power button too.
Yeah,
it's up in the top right corner. I didn't like this for the first 48 hours. Because I was getting used to it. Now I think it's fine. I liked the old one. I thought it was nice.
I like the old one. The old one's good.
Yes.
And I think
the new one is too big. It's too chunky. I'll get used to that. I love the mute button. I was watching Eurovision on Peacock But also, somehow, I was able to hear Graham Norton from the BBC, who's hilarious. And so I was able to mute when I wanted to hear Graham and then unmute when I wanted to hear the better audio from Peacock. That was pretty nice. I did like that. I also like clicking with the arrow keys sometimes instead of swiping. It is a little more precise. So I think I'll get used to it. I think it's a decent remote.
So
the Apple TV itself is slightly better. You know, it does HDR 60 frames per second and all that. Really haven't noticed that in day-to-day life, but it's truly a little bit better.
Your new girl, Siri, bit chunky, but you like how you commute.
Yeah, I'm getting used to him. Siri's a guy for me.
Okay, got it.
But you like using the click? Like, there are times where I wish I did have a click
I'm very used to the swipe, and I still use it because it's there. But there were some times, especially in app selection, where I'm like, oh yeah, this is a little more precise.
Interesting.
Click.
I'm enticed by the remote. I think it's smart that they sell the remote separately because I have an old Apple TV.
You don't have to buy the new 4K Apple TV if you don't want.
I might get a remote.
It's only $59, the price of a Chromecast. Actually, more expensive than a Chromecast.
Wow.
Let's talk about what to watch and under surveillance.
Not like real estate. It's all about location.
Under surveillance.
Hey, Brian, the first teaser trailer's out for The Eternals, coming to theaters November 5th.
That was a teaser in that I recognized actors, but was given no context as to who they were, why they were there. That's a teaser, right?
Yep. I mean, that is a teaser.
Okay.
You don't want to give away any of the big plot elements, although anybody who's read the comics will know certain scenes, but if you don't, it's all, you know, just giving you a vibe of what this is going to be like.
Happy for it.
Yeah, I really liked it. Of course, I've read the comics too. So there were some scenes where I'm like, so I guess, is he going to be? Yeah, that kind of stuff. So yeah, looking forward to it. I thought it looks good. Totally different Marvel vibe. You know, this is not, like, that doesn't shape it up to be an action movie.
I suppose the Eternals as a property is less enough known that you can get away with a true teaser where it's just like, hey man, we're not going to tell you nothing about nobody. We're not going to expect you to know nobody. We're just going to give you a vibe.
Yeah. It is directed by Chloe Zhao. So I assume that the Eternals will be living that van life.
Okay. To be honest, quick side jag. I'm wondering what Chloe Zhao is going to do with her Chloe Zhao magic. You know, like, is she going to like get Kumail Nanjiani off in the corner and be like, just talk to me about what it's like to grow up in Pakistan. And then, you know, somehow that becomes part of the story.
Yeah.
Or something.
Right. And now Pakistan is being an immortal.
Yeah. Right. I wouldn't doubt it.
Right. Right. No, I'm kind of looking forward to that too. There's a mixed release schedule set for the movie Operation Mincemeat, directed by John Madden, starring Colin Firth and Kelly MacDonald. This tells a story about a spy operation in World War II to fool the Nazis. It will be showing in theaters in the UK and Ireland January 7th, 2022, but then coming to Netflix in North America and Latin America. So maybe some limited theater showings, you know, because they're buddies with Cinemark now, but not the traditional theater showing like it's getting in the UK.
Dude, if you've not read the book, you should read the book, and you should read and consume anything you can about this amazing story.
Yeah, it's a pretty great story. I'm looking forward to seeing it come alive in as many ways as possible. I do think it's interesting that they were able to strike a split deal like that and be like, yeah, theaters in the UK, great. Netflix, sure. Whoever can pay for the region, we'll give them the rights. HBO Max put a trailer out for the Friends reunion special coming May 27th, showing a little more of what they're going to be doing. The cast is playing a trivia game about the show amongst themselves. There's also a section where they seem to be interviewed by James Corden. There's a table read of an episode. I know this is probably still not something for you, Brian, because of the nostalgia element, but did any of this trailer change your mind at all?
The only thing that has changed is how many other people have told me how excited they are for this. So it's like, I'm listening, but while this is probably not for me, I recognize it apparently is for a lot of other people.
Yeah. And I thought it was smart to show that, like, we're not just going to be sitting on the set talking. We're going to have them playing games. We're going to have them doing table reads. There's going to be lots of guest appearances, but also showing, like, there'll be plenty of crying and nostalgia if that's what you're here for.
I would love it. And this is pure speculation on my part, but it's like, if you've read the tabloids about many of these individuals over the last 25, 30 years, like, they've had some adventures. And part of me would love it if there was just a few candid moments of like, yeah, and then I went into rehab because I was an alcoholic or whatever. You know, it would be neat to experience that.
A digital short spinoff of Rick and Morty is coming to Adult Swim. It's part of several spinoffs, not just Rick and Morty, but Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Robot Chicken, and Pretty Faces Going to Hell, all getting these short anywhere there's digital access to Adult Swim videos. Each series will have between 8 and 10 short episodes. The Rick and Morty spinoff is called The Vindicators, featuring the characters Supernova, Vance Maximus, Alan Rails, Crosubot, and Noob Noob. If those sound familiar, they appeared in season 3, episode 4, episode Vindicators 3, The Return of World Ender. And they're back.
They used to call these types of things pitch reels.
Yeah, or webisodes.
Webisodes, I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's cool.
I mean,
I'm into it.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's cool. We'll watch it, and then we'll go, that's cool, or I didn't think that was cool, or maybe, I don't know, is it cool?
Cool down.
Keep an eye out. A bunch of other notes here. Production has ended on season 1 of Wheel of Time for Amazon. And even though they haven't set a new release date for season 1, they approved second season. So they must have liked what they saw. Netflix will split the final season of La Casa de Papel, aka Money Heist, into 2. Part 5, Volume 1 premieres September 3rd. Part 2 comes December 3rd. So September 3rd, December 3rd for the 2 parts of season 5 of Money Heist. Each part has 5 episodes. The band BTS broke its own record for most YouTube views in 24 hours Friday, reaching 113 million views for the music video for their new song, Butter. Netflix anime Resident Evil Infinite Darkness has a trailer and a release date of July 8th. After wrapping up Insecure for HBO, Issa Rae is bringing an unscripted series to HBO Max called Sweet Life Los Angeles, launching this summer, focused on life in South Los Angeles. HBO Max will also get new DC animated shows, Batman, The Caped Crusader, and My Adventures with Superman. Caped Crusader is kind of dark. My Adventures with Superman seems kind of light. If you ever wondered how Willy Wonka got started in chocolate making, Warner Brothers has cast Timothy Chalamet to show you. Willy Wonka, an origin story movie. Chalamet will sing and dance. We don't know anything else about it. Evil, which is one of 2 CBS series to move from broadcast to Paramount Plus, will premiere season 2 on the streaming service June 20th. Going the other direction, Warner Media is bringing some HBO Max exclusives to television, TBS and TNT. Titans will arrive on TNT in June and Love Life on TBS in August, and then others will follow. And later this year, in celebration of the 20th anniversary of the first Harry Potter film, HBO Max will release a Harry Potter quiz show that fans will be able to play along with at home.
Two of these really pop out to me. One is I have confused feelings about doing prequels to the origins of Willy Wonka. Part of me generously wants to say, hey, do you like that flavor? Would you like a youthful version of that flavor? Would you like to know more of the story? Great. Go for it. The cynical part of me wants to say, oh, this is how you buy a property and grind out, the last remaining magic that's left in it. Right. But the idea of a trivia stream, essentially a trivia stream, a pub quiz, basically, based around the Harry Potter film sounds fascinating to me.
Yeah. That it's funny with the Willy Wonka thing. I would be less excited for another take on the same story. Right. Would be like, sure, seeing Timothy Chalamet as Willy Wonka sounds interesting, but do I need to see this story again? I don't personally think so. So making it a prequel makes me at least more interested. But I'm with you, like, it could easily just feel like they're pressing a story that doesn't have anything to it. Although they are working with Roald Dahl's organization on it, so maybe there's some help there. But yeah, the Harry Potter thing seems like a better way to go, which is like, hey, you love Harry Potter? Let's all celebrate Harry Potter and do 4-hour-long quiz episodes that you can play along with and possibly beyond, because they're soliciting fans to apply to be on the show as well. Yeah, that seems pretty cool.
One of the things I've had my eyes on has been VFX School from Captain Disillusion. If you're familiar with Captain Disillusion's channel, he's the guy that's got like the silver makeup on the bottom half of his face. And he breaks down popular viral videos, explaining how they're fake or whatever. In this case, he does something totally different. He leaves his quote unquote intern Alan in charge of the channel. And intern Alan says, I don't even know what I would talk about. He's like, I've got mildly popular viral videos to go debunk. And he leaves them, and intern Alan, air quotes, who's actually the guy running the channel, just does a 45-minute breakdown of the visual effects that went into Flight of the Navigator. And it is a loving tribute that just was so hypnotic. I watched it twice. And so I love the idea that, by the very end of it, He sort of implies, per your segue, that sequels are the new reboots. Like, there's talk about a reboot of Flight of the Navigator. He was like, you don't need to do a reboot. What if you just picked up this dangling thread from the show? Let me do it. I'll be happy to direct it. Anyway, here's my resume information. It's truly nice. Adorable. It made me feel really, really good and got me to reach out to him on Twitter to just thank him for bringing me so much joy.
Oh, that's great. That's very VFX cool. In fact, I, on the other hand, watched Army of the Dead.
Oh, which I assume inspired you so much that you reached out to say, good job, do more of that.
Zack Snyder. I should reach out to Tig Notaro to say, Tig, thank goodness you were in that movie because I enjoyed your performance. Yeah, it was on television, on my television. It would have been in theaters if it was, if I'd seen it in a theater. It was fine. It was one of those movies that I enjoyed less and less as it went on. Like I'm like, oh, okay, cool premise. All right, let's see where this goes. I loved, not too much of a spoiler here, but if you want to be pure pristine, maybe plug your ears for a second. I love that they fast forward through what you would expect from a zombie movie in like the credits. They're like, yeah, so here's where the zombie came from. And then during the credits, we'll show the battle for Las Vegas. Okay, now we start the story after they have walled off Las Vegas. I'm like, okay, that's clever. And I was into that. But the story just kind of plodded along for me afterwards. Yeah. And
you kind of wish like the whole movie was that way. It's like, and anyway, this happened and then that happened.
Yeah, now get me to the next part really fast. Yeah. Yeah, there were some fun parts. It was a good cast, and there were some great action scenes, but overall there were some I don't know, just left me flat, put it that way. What should we be on the lookout for, Bryce?
Hey, we got an email from Mickey, who says, "Hey, Killers, season 4 of the CBS All Access show, I believe, No Activity, dropped recently, and it was pretty surprising to see how they leaned into the restrictions created by the pandemic." So No Activity is actually originally an Australian show about cops, goofy cops and dispatchers. It's kind of similar to Reno 911. It's a goofy cop sort of premise, but readapted for America. I suppose in season 4, because of COVID, they went entirely animated. But they kept the same cast and the writing, the comedic beats and the tone, which is pretty interesting. In case you missed it, definitely worth a look. Keep on cutting those cords, Mickey. Thank you, Mickey. Yeah, that's interesting. I remembered when I looked at the trailer for this that we actually briefly talked about this when it was first brought to CBS back in like 2017. And it's still on the air and it's doing well even amid the pandemic. So check that out. It's No Activity. They're on Paramount Plus. Excuse me, Paramount Plus. But there's 4 seasons of that now. If you've got something we should be on the lookout for, email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Thank you.
Hey, Brian.
Yes.
I've been reading this book, Scorpion, by this guy, Christian Cantrell. Funny story. Christian Cantrell is one of only two people from the zine that I ran in Austin that I still keep in touch with.
Now, hold on. You're saying you ran a zine back in Austin, Texas, the place where I am right now?
Yes, I did.
And there was somebody else who worked on it, and you keep in touch with this person?
There is, and there was, and now this guy's a published author multiple times, and he's got a new book coming out called Scorpion. Very tech-heavy adventure, spy, time travel, serial killer story. I'm going to be hosting a book event for Christian on the Mysterious Galaxy website, San Diego bookstore, mystgalaxy.com, mystgalaxy.com. Wednesday, the 26th, Wednesday the 26th at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. So go sign up and hang out with us for an hour on Wednesday. It'll be super fun.
Well, now I feel like a terrible person because you used your one slot to promote something, to promote somebody else's work and your encouragement of their work. Whereas all I'm going to do is very selfishly promote the fact that Doghouse Systems are the people who have all of our systems on loan that keep this very operation up on and running. And the only way that we're going to survive even one more minute is if right now you don't go to doghousesystems.com/rogue. That's R-O-G-U-E. Use promo code rogue at checkout. You'll get an SSD when you check out, and you'll be keeping us in business.
Yeah. And if that wasn't happening, you couldn't have heard me say anything. So really, that's the important thing. You got to pay attention to that. Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Oh, folks, it looks like the box office is back. F9, the latest Fast and Furious movie, released outside the United States and made $162.4 million in eight markets. Those eight markets included China, Korea, and Hong Kong. It is by far the best opening weekend for a movie since March 2020. F9 made $135 million in China alone, making it the second largest Fast and Furious release in China after Fate of the Furious, and the first U.S. title since Avengers Endgame to pass $100 million on opening weekend in China. So, pandemic or not, it's just really popular in China. F9 did not premiere in the U.K., but the U.K. market brought in £7 million on the strength of Peter Rabbit 2, making it the biggest opening weekend for UK theaters since Pixar's Onward debuted March 6, 2020. So £7 million is bringing it close to what it would normally get in normal times.
That is remarkable. Netflix will hold a promotional week June 7th through the 11th called Geeked Week. It will package up multiple content announcements from geekedweek.com. So look for news and trailers from and interviews related to Masters of the Universe Revelation, The Umbrella Academy, The Sandman, The Cuphead Shows, The Witcher, Lucifer, and more.
So this is just a week of press announcements that they looked at their calendar and thought, man, those are all really close together. How do we space them out? And then someone says, we don't. We move them closer together and we call it Geeked Week.
Real quick, you're probably more dialed in on this than I am, but how close are we to back to normal for like San Diego Comic-Con?
You've undercut me. I've not heard any news, and I don't know if there is any news out there, but I will do a quick Google search for you
you don't have Comic-Con. It just feels like this is right around the time that would normally live, you know?
But even without Comic-Con, this is something that Netflix owns. This is happening in the video game industry where the console makers and the publishers are saying we can just hold our own events whenever. We don't need to pay the ESA millions of dollars to do to do E3 every year. And we're still seeing that. Like COVID helped, but this was going to happen regardless. And I think something similar happening for Netflix makes a lot of sense regardless of the past 12 months.
So there will be an in-person Comic-Con event November on Thanksgiving weekend.
November.
Not the show.
Yeah.
But that will be their first in-person Comic-Con related, San Diego Comic-Con related event. And it sounds like they're targeting coming back in person next year, 2022.
Got it.
The week of the season finale of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Nielsen reports the top-rated streaming show was NCIS.
NCIS.
Yes, NCIS with 890 million minutes on Netflix. Falcon took number two spot with 769 minutes, followed by Shadow and Bone. And keep in mind, these streaming results are only Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, and Hulu. They don't have HBO Max as part of this or anybody else. But yeah, people love their NCIS.
I heard somebody earlier today act as though they didn't trust Nielsen numbers. And I'm like, I think I trust Nielsen numbers more than any other numbers.
I mean, every number has a margin of error, has a trust index. Nielsen's are useful within a certain parameter is kind of the way I look at it, right?
Agreed. At a Google's developer event, Google I.O., last week, Google announced it now has more than 80 million monthly active devices running Google TV. The new interface running on Android TV, a Google TV remote control, will be built into Android 12, and developers will be able to let users cast onto Android TV device from a Chrome device on a tablet or a phone.
Yeah, so from your Chrome browser, you'll be able to cast from your tablet or your phone. Catching up is good. Good for Google TV. And on a decent amount of devices out there. So that is not nothing. All right, let's get to the dispatches from the front. We got an email from the boss, Chris. Oh. He wants to offer us a different take on what I think theaters would benefit from. Chris says, as a fan of going to the theater, the biggest issue I've had since leaving New York City for the suburbs a decade ago is the lack of content and the trend towards longer experiences, longer runtime, more ads, more trailers. I live within a 10 to 20 minute drive of five theaters with a combined 30 screens. There can be months long stretches where there's nothing good released. I think it means nothing he wants to see released. Then a sudden flurry of movies, many of whom only stick around briefly. Meanwhile, if you're subscribed to four or five streaming services, you might get 2 or 3 hours of good new programming every week. And he says, that's why I love the news of the Netflix deal with Cinemark, and perhaps a realization that there's less competition between theater goers and couch surfers than imagined. He has some more details in here, but Chris is not alone. He seems to be supportive of the idea of like, hey, when I want to go to a theater, I'd like the option, but I don't want to have to.
Yeah. Look, Chris, hi, it's me. 3 years ago, we're back. Stuff's going to come out. You're not going to know if you're going to want to see it or not. You're going to have to rely on things like RottenTomatoes.com or word of mouth, and you'll either go and enjoy it or you won't. Welcome to the movies.
The other thing that Chris suggested was, hey man, what if you do your television shows in theaters? He's like, I wouldn't do it for every show, but I'd have paid $5 or $7 to watch The Mandalorian or The Falcon and the Winter Soldier in a theater every week. I'd still subscribe because I want convenient access on every device. But you know, less time spent in the theater, but still get a like big theater experience on something like The Mandalorian. I could see that. He says, train me to go more regularly because the money and time commitment is so low that it is kind of silly not to enjoy cinema quality programming at an actual cinema. I promise I'll buy popcorn.
Yeah, I don't believe you. I believe you intend to, but I don't believe you. Big Jim writes in saying, I just want to point out that several actors have made tons of money selling tickets to conventions where the main draw is all the captains or most of the Doctor's companions or the Marvel Avengers at Comic-Con or all of the cats of the Delta Quadrant or the last one's made up. Who cares?
I like that one.
When Brian says that he doesn't see how reunions could do well on TV, it's simple. Just look at conventions. People pay a lot of money, a lot more money for an HBO subscription just to see their favorite actors together again. Now he goes, look, here's my point. Just because yes, in person, live, that electricity of being there, of seeing your favorite people interact in a spontaneous way, I'm in, but I don't believe you can manufacture that on a dime and then include it with a subscription.
For the most one of the most popular sitcoms of all time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Your mileage may vary, but thank you, Big Jim. Appreciate the email. And thank you all. Now, next week is the Memorial Day holiday in the United States. But here's the thing. We don't like to follow conventions. We're the cord killers. So we're taking our Memorial Day holiday off a week later. We will be here next week and doing a show, and then we'll be off the week after that. Why? Just because. All right? Do you need to know? No, you don't. Just be here. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll see you next time.
Hey, Tom Merritt.
Yes, Brian Brushwood.
Know who I love even more than my own children?
Your other children?
No, not my wife. I know what you're saying. I love our $5 patrons. These are the people that keep us loud, live, and independent. Thank you so much, $5 patrons.
You know what? I love them more than not life itself, because then I'd be dead and I couldn't appreciate them, but really, really, really close. And I'm so thankful that they are here to make this show happen.
Thank you so much to all of our $5 a month patrons. You guys are wizards. You're champions.
Thank you, everyone.
You're heroes.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.